Suddenly I find I'm sitting all by myself at the front. I'm like, oh, where's it all gone? it's all right then. I wanted to say a bit this afternoon about working with thoughts and feelings. Because in a way, although our body is it's a very obvious, tangible part of our experience, and we've been encouraging you a lot to bring attention to it, we often forget about it. So our sense of self is often much more obviously attached to our thoughts and feelings. We think much more that's who we are, and that's partly why we've been encouraging you to bring attention to body, because it brings a different reference point, particularly if you explore it in the ways that we've been exploring, where it's not your concept of body, it's not your self-image. It's an actual alive investigation inside what is it like to have a body, what is it like to touch into the elements and notice they're the same elements as are making the trees and the water, the sky. So it takes us into an aspect of ourselves which is beyond the personal self. And so it's very, very useful to do that in terms of body. And it's also useful to do it in terms of mind. And so thoughts and feelings in the Buddhist teachings are actually classified slightly separately. There's in the Four Foundations of Mindfulness, which it's just one way of classifying experience, but feeling is called Vedana. And it is usually you just notice it as pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral within the body. So it sounds really simple. And that's a and some people say that feeling on that level is only physical. It's not related to the mental. Other people say you can have mental and physical together. That's personally what I more sense feeling as. So if I have a thought, I find it very useful to explore in the body. What's this thought doing to me? It's like, because usually it pushes and pulls, and it's hot or it's cold, or it has some characteristics that I can explore. So anyway, in this talk, I'm gonna try and explore a little bit more how we can start to approach thoughts and feelings because we identify with them so strongly. So, I was thinking, where can I start with this? It's all so complicated. And so basically, I was thinking, well, spiritual practice is, for me anyway, it's about learning to explore what is beyond my limited view of what I am. So it's learning to connect to a bigger picture and to see what that does to this being, to see if it helps to free up a little bit, you know. So the Buddha talked about freeing the heart, liberation from suffering, and for me that's all to do with learning to connect to a bigger picture and to see what I'm holding on to, which is creating suffering. And again, the Buddha summed it up quite nicely, where it's like where I'm holding on to tightly, where my experience is being pushed along by greed or by aversion, or where I'm simply not knowing what's going on. So spiritual practice for me is helping to explore into these things what's happening. So in terms of thoughts and feelings, again, like the first thing that the Buddha says is just know them as they are. So know a contracted mind as a contracted mind. Know an expanded mind as an expanded mind. Or know the impermanence of a thought. Notice that it comes in. Notice that it leaves. Notice that a feeling arises and a feeling ceases. So this is what Noon was talking about yesterday. This is the very non-self nature of things. Everybody's thoughts and feelings are arising and ceasing. all of the time. This is non-self. And so if you can start to notice that in your experience, you're starting to notice, oh, this is a common characteristic. This is like, I doubt there's one person in this room whose thoughts aren't coming and going. Feelings coming, going, you know, it's like, but what happens is we jump on it and we go, this is my thought, this is who I am, this directs my energy, it actually forms us up. We start to act in ways that are directed by our thoughts and by our feelings. And the Buddha pointed very, very clearly to this, and I'm sure we can all think of examples. Like, I had something that happened to me that was really, like, it was really embarrassing because it was so like textbook, where I was staying in a monastery recently, and I was on the rota to do breakfast, and I got up from meditation and I wasn't feeling very well, and I went to the toilet, and then in the toilet I was like, oh, I'm late. And what happened from that feeling of being late was I felt like I'm wrong, and that this is not going to be okay in this situation because breakfast is going to be late. So then I start coming down the stairs and there's two people in the kitchen. And I'm like, oh, they've got there before me and they're doing it because I'm late and I'm wrong and I'm bad and the breakfast isn't going to happen, whatever. And so I got really spiky. I was like, I'm here, it's all right. Look, my name's on the rota, I'm doing it, you know. Kind of sent them away. Quite like, get out of my kitchen, and then I realised they were just in there doing their jobs. They weren't like trying to take over my job or thinking where was I, or you know, thinking breakfast was going to be late or that I was irresponsible. They were doing their jobs. So then I felt bad. And I almost went to find them to say, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to be so abrupt and chase you out of the kitchen. And then I thought, no, stop. They probably haven't even noticed, you know, it's all right. I don't need to continue this chain. But it's like, this is what we do all of the time, isn't it, with our thoughts and our feelings. We just like, they come in, we identify and we act. And then we feel good or bad about how we've acted, so we do something else. And then we go, oh God, or great, or whatever. And we're just constantly riding along on this kind of chain of events. And so at some point we need to cut the chain. And the Buddha said that at the point of contact is a very good point to cut that chain, because this is where our tendency to jump on and to create something out of the thought or the feeling arises. And so some of what we've been teaching has been trying to widen the picture of what we are so that we have some resource in order to see, oh, I'm having contact with this state. I don't need to jump into it. So like some of the ways we've been trying to bring attention down into the body, that brings a stability of attention that then sometimes we can see more clearly, this thought or a feeling is coming up, we can catch it more as it's coming up, and as it contacts, we don't need to go, you know, into the chain of reaction. Or what we've been teaching about noticing the space of awareness, that's also, it's to create a sense of spaciousness and knowing that, again, we can feel something coming and we don't immediately jump on the train. Or we jump on the train and we notice when the train has gone 2 miles instead of 20 miles. And wherever we catch it, that's okay. Same thing with the Brahma Viharas, the qualities of heart that we've been teaching. These are, I forgot to say it when I was talking about them before, but Noon said it very clearly, these are natural qualities of heart. They're like, they're here already, and what we're doing is evoking them, and they're called boundless qualities. So when the Buddha talks about cultivating them, there's a lovely phrase where it's like, my heart is being made to grow with these qualities. My heart is well made to grow That's one translation of it. And it's like, because they create a spaciousness and an attentiveness that, again, thoughts or feelings arise, and there's more capacity to catch them before we go out, jump on the train. So, so the Buddha talks about when we have that kind of stability and flexibility of mind and attentiveness, that's where we can meet as it actually is, whatever is arising. And that's something that's very often repeated in his teachings. So it's like, there's a lovely example when he's, I don't know if it was before his enlightenment or just after, but where he's talking about fear, and he puts himself into he puts himself into scary places. What for him was scary places? So like, places where he says something like tree, something like camping ground spirits and field spirits. He's obviously in wild places. And so in that place, he can hear wild animals coming. And this makes fear arise. And then he notices, but then I'm getting really paranoid about that twig that's like rustling, or the wind rustling in the leaves. He's noticing that he's becoming afraid of fear. He's afraid of the fear arising, which that's certainly familiar to me. Like, I'm not experiencing fear, but I know it's going to come, you know? And so what he says at that point is, well, why don't I meet fear when it comes? So even this fear of the fear, just meet that, meet that, meet that. And when he does that, it can drop. He's letting it arise, he's knowing as it is, and it's able to go. But this isn't always so easy, because of our tendency to jump on the train. So again, although we've been giving some tools of stabilizing, of expanding the mind to help to catch what's going on, there's also some quite specific teachings on learning to work with thought or feeling that's related, I would say. And when I first read this teaching, I was like, oh, it sounds really hard, you know, it sounds kind of harsh. And then as I studied it more and practiced with it more, I'm like, actually, no, this is actually what seems, it really works, you know, they're not like stages of anything, they're just different tools to bring in. So I thought I'd mention some of these tools and as ways of, like, when you're having very repetitive thoughts or very obsessive feelings, ways of sometimes cutting the process so you can step back, come to a resourced place through the body or through awareness or through just a gentle building of presence, and come back to meet again so that you can actually meet more clearly what's going on. So one of the ways in which the Buddha says to work with difficult thought, if it's really, really obsessive, is to just shut it down. It's like, so this is actually the last in the list, and he says, as if a strong man were to clench the fist of another one and wrestle him down, you know, it's like with tongue pressed against the roof of your mouth, you beat this thing down, which I've never particularly been a fan of this approach. But it can occasionally be necessary if you are really, really being harassed by a mental state, and if your tendency to get hooked into it is so strong at that point that it is going to invade you and it is going to take you over and it is going to run you, at some point it is necessary to go, no, not now. Until I get some resource, until I get some capacity to actually meet you and welcome you, the door is closed. It's like talk to the hand. And I've had to do this at times in my practice. So when things are, I had a moment where I had a very, very intense experience arising, and I just felt like I was going down the tubes, and I had these mental, I had a lot of thoughts coming that were like, I'm just totally worthless, and I should just leave, and I should, you know, give up, and all of that. And it was just going round and round so often. I was like, I just have to not listen to this. I have to close the door because it's wearing me out. And that wasn't a door that was closed forever. It's like when I had more resource, I could come back and start to listen to what was going on in that place. But at that time, when I was so vulnerable and it was so intense, it was not the moment. I couldn't be a friend to that state. I couldn't listen to it. I couldn't even be strong with it. I just needed to close the door for a moment. And I've met other people for whom this has been useful at different times. So it's not to say that that's a good option permanently. So some people use concentration practice. Concentration practice can be very helpful for building a stability of attention, for instance. But some people use it to repress what's going on. And that's not good, because at some point it's going to have to come out. So Ajahn Chah said it's like if you just shut something down, it's like putting a stone on a kind of rubbish bin. It's like the stone can stay there, but the rubbish is going to keep rotting, you know, and eventually you're going to have to take the stone off and have a look, kind of thing. So I think this can be a good, it can be at the right time, it can be a good tool, but not a permanent. It's not something to do ongoingly. Rather to find, if you are in the position that you're needing to do that, it's better to find support and even outside help and somebody to help you listen externally. When you don't have enough strength to listen internally, that can be helpful. And that's what I did at that point. So I went and found spiritual friends and I started talking to them about what was happening because it was too strong for me to hold alone. So that's a good thing to bear in mind if you're in that state. another way, yeah?
When you're saying that you have to just stop it or put the stone over it, how to do that time? Because you're in such a big emotions that time.
Yeah.
It's, and you're so vulnerable.
Yeah.
And you don't have... You try many times,
mm-hmm.
keeps coming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I just mentally drew a line, actually. I was like, as soon as you start to come, I'm not going to listen. And I would put my attention somewhere else. So it takes some determination. It takes actually quite a lot of strength to totally close your mind to something as well. But that's what the Buddha talks about. He's like, use another aspect of your mind to just take your attention elsewhere. I don't know how to say it more than that, so I would, if the thoughts started to come, I would just refuse them. I would just be like, I'm not going to listen to you. And if they carried on coming, I would just not let it get into my thinking process. So it's a bit like if somebody's talking to you and you don't want to listen and they carry on talking and you just kind of, all right, well, the noise is there, but I'm not taking in what you're saying. Does that make sense? Yeah.
I think for me the difficult part might be to decide to do it because, for example, if there's an angry voice, then of course it kind of keeps telling me that I need to be repeating this story, and
yes.
If I believe it, I don't understand that that's actually a voice that I should just say no to.
Say that again.
Like, it's not easy to really realize that, okay, this is now something I should shut out.
Yeah, well, I'm going to come to that. So it's a really good point. So it's like, at what point do we decide this is not okay? I can't bring awareness to this. And I think for me it's when... There's a sense in the mind when there's enough stability to be able to receive something, or when you see you're not getting so caught in it. It's like that point where something is completely able to invade you, and it's actually harmful. So this is it's another thing the Buddha points to, which is like, look at the effect of the thing, of whatever that thought is. Yeah? So like for me, that particular thought that was coming was, it was very, it carried a huge amount of aversion and wish to destroy, actually. It just wanted to unpick me completely. And I was just like, I'm not, I don't have to believe you. I don't have to take you in. So it's like when something is so poisonous to your system that it's not good to listen to it at that moment. It's not to say that you'll never listen to it. It's that you don't have the resource at that time to be able to meet it. So it's like this thing of like having a place to meet the thoughts and the feelings. So that might be a stability through the body or stability through awareness. And you have some resource then to go, okay, who are you? But when that thing is coming in and completely taking over your awareness, you have no resource to meet that thing. Does that make sense?
I think what I was trying to say was more that when it's completely taking over, then I also believe that thought, and then I don't even realize that it's
gone. Yeah, so you might have periods of that, but it's rare that that would continue without any pause whatsoever. So when you get a pause, you know, or even at that point, if you're being taken over, it's good to start to talk to somebody, you know, because it's, yeah, these are places where we're very vulnerable and where we sometimes don't have the inner resource to be able to meet what's going on. And sometimes we have more than resource than we think also. So I had enough resource, which I would never have thought I did, to go, you know, there's a boundary here that you're not going to cross. Does that make sense? Yeah?
What about if we are, for example, talking about argument situation, and there's a other partner, and you're arguing, and, well, what is the most reasonable way to, you know, close your ears, and, because that's not maybe the best way, but if you know what I mean.
I do. I think I don't want to get into things between people just right at this time, so I'll talk about the inner experience for now. Maybe we can come back to that later tonight. Yeah? Is that okay?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think what I'm trying, well, what I know I'm trying to say is that this is not a, this is just like, what, the reason I started with this was it's the most extreme thing on the spectrum. So it's not something to do all of the time. It's something to do with very, very intense states that you're being completely invaded by. Just as with someone else, I wouldn't recommend all the time going, well, I'm just not listening to you, you know. It's like, it's only if it's getting really, really unreasonable and out of order, you know, and it's actually you can't meet at that time. You know, you really can't meet. You can't find any common ground to listen to each other. So, but it's one way. And it is one valid way, you know, that has its moment, it has its time and place. And then something else that the Buddha said to reflect upon, which relates to what you're asking, Anna, is he did say, you know, reflect on what is this thought or feeling bringing to me? Is it harmful or is it not harmful? So is it something that is... going to create more suffering if I follow it? And when you reflect like that, it's actually really, really helpful for unentangling some very entangled things. So for instance, when I was very, very much younger, I had an eating disorder, which I'd developed when I was very young and for quite good reasons at the time, which I later realised, you know. But it was going on and it was going on and I was acting in very harmful ways to myself and I didn't know how to stop that. And there were certain thoughts that went along with it and all of that. And there was a certain point where I just started to question. So... the overt feeling, so I was anorexic, so I would control what I was eating. And the overt feeling when I controlled what I was eating was one of safety. It made me feel safe to do that. Which anyone who hasn't had anorexia or hasn't got anorexia would think, well, that's crazy, you're starving yourself. How could that possibly make you feel safe? But it did, because that was the feeling connection that I had made with that particular object. And so when I started to realize how harmful this was, that I needed to let it go, I started to really work with that feeling connection. So I would notice, I started to listen, oh, this gives me a feeling of safety. Is this true? Is this a true thing? Is it actually making me safe to not eat? Clearly not, you know. It's like my body was in a very bad state. But sometimes the feeling and the thought connections that we make don't make sense. They're not rational. There, sometimes a feeling connection has been made that has made sense at a particular time. And then we've carried on a habit for years and years and years, and we've kept that feeling connection, and we haven't recognized how harmful it is, that it's out of place, that it's destructive. And so there's a point at which we stop and we go, is this a wholesome thing? Is this for my well-being, or is it causing harm? And once you start to really see that it's causing harm, you can loosen your relationship with it. A bit like Noon said with smoking, where it comes to a point where it's like, I just, no. Hasn't got me in the same way, because I see its harmfulness. So we bring the mind to reflect on the consequences of following these particular thoughts or feelings. And that can be a really helpful and very powerful tool. And then you can start to meet some other states which were underneath why you have started to feel or think in that way or whatever. Does that make sense? Yeah.
So deny yourself of doing something.
Yes, so I made myself stop starving myself. I was like, no, can't do that anymore. So, but then I would consciously feel what happened. It was a very conscious process around it, and a very long process.
Yeah.
But the first movement in it was to notice the destructiveness of some of the thoughts and the feelings, which was very helpful to really take that on. And then another tool that we can use if we have a particular thought or feeling coming up and it has an obvious tone is to use some of the tools out of the tool bag that we've been giving. So if you have a very aversive, negative, resentful, not wanting feeling tone, or a lot of thoughts coming in that way, you can bring metta, because that balances what's going on and can help you to meet it more clearly. Or if you have a lot of grasping, wanting, I must have, whatever, you can contemplate more the impermanence of things, or the aspect of life which is like, we can't grasp it. Or if you have a lot of lust for another person and it's just out of control, and it's, you're not going to be in relationship, and it's just going on, or you're a nun and you have a lot of lust going on. It's like you contemplate the compounded nature of the body, you know. It's like, this is a body made of liver, heart, eyeballs. It's like, give me your eyeball, you know. It's like you do something which balances that state of mind, and then you can feel more what's going on. It may be a longing, or with aversion, it may be fear, or it may be some other thing that you need to get to know. But you may need something that helps to balance the state of mind so you can get close enough so it's not a wild animal that you can't actually touch it. So that's also helpful. And that's partly why we've been presenting an array of tools, because actually sometimes for different mind states, different things are helpful. So if you have a very aversive mind state, if you're already not very comfortable in your body, then to contemplate the compounded nature of the body, and that, you know, there's one of the words used for that contemplation is that the body is repulsive, which when I was anorexic, I was like, do not tell me, you know, I don't need to know that. And actually later on, I've come to realize that particular word in Pali doesn't mean repulsive. It means compounded. It means that our body is made of many different things, which it is. But those different things are the same things as the leaves, and that for me is a very rich connection. It helps open into the more universal nature of body without having to go through this is loathsome and disgusting and repulsive and some of all the other things, which may be useful for counteracting lust, but they're not very useful for if you're not very comfortable in your body. So it's all, there's all different possibilities on the menu, depending on what your mind state is, depending what the feeling or the thought state is that you're working with. another tool which I really like that the Buddha talked about was if you're getting very caught in your thinking and feeling process and you can't come to a clear place of meeting it, he said, distract yourself. He said, endeavour to be without attention or reflection. Which is quite, I was like, did you say that? And he talks about mending things or, so doing something different. If you're not able to meet what's going on, do something different for a while, not permanently. So, but to calm the mind, to bring it to a bigger sense, a bigger, more relaxed place. So he does, he talks about mending something or maybe studying a bit. And this really works. So it has been known that Noon has said to me when I'm in a really bad state, she's like, go tidy something up. Cause I like to organize and, dig. Yeah, she's digging there.
Chop wood.
Do something that is going to move the energy. The Buddha says, don't do building work. Because he has a very good reason, because once your mind is settled, you will be too preoccupied with the building work to get back to your meditation. Well spotted, Buddha. So, but I really like that, that he's included that in the list of possibilities. And it's going for a walk. To me, sometimes at Ekatulani, you know, it's a retreat place and I love it. I totally love what we're doing there. But sometimes there's so many things coming in. I'm getting really caught up. And just to go for a walk to the top of the hills, it's like physically I get a different viewpoint. Emotionally, I get a different viewpoint. Mentally, I get a different viewpoint. And that's a very skillful means to be able to then come back to whatever was needing to be seen in a clearer way. So it's not with an intention of distraction or just getting totally like, oh, I'm never going to look at that again. But it's like, what is going to create the space for me to actually be able to be with whatever this entrenched thought or feeling pattern is. Yeah. And then we come to the point where the last way that the Buddha recommends, or it's not actually in list order here, I've kind of changed them round, but the one that I find then to be very useful, because it's like we've gone through all these different stages of finding out what's going on, or finding space. And then he says, so to work with difficult thoughts and feelings, start to look at the causes. So a bit like I said with that pattern around eating that I had, it's like I had to see the destructiveness of the behaviour. I had to say no to some of the thinking patterns. And then I had to pay attention to what was underneath. So why? Why is this happening? So I had to meet some of the places of aloneness and fear and needing to feel needing to feel held in ways that I hadn't been held, blah, 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 you know, blah, 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 I shouldn't say blah, 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 but, you know, it's like, there was a lot of stuff there that needed to be met. And so, like, then to get underneath and start to feel what are the real causes of this habitual pattern of thinking or feeling. And there's a very, there's a really lovely story, which, because all this, it can start to feel like quite heavy. So there's a really lovely story that it displays what we do when we don't know about the causes of things, which comes from a previous life story of the Buddha. So in traditional Buddhist cosmology, the Buddha who gave the teachings that we're teaching from is only one in a whole series, and he had a whole series of lives before he was the Buddha, and he was born as different animals during those lives and developed lots of different qualities, and it's like lots of little myths, and kind of it's quite nice. There's lots of children's books about this as well. But so it's a previous life where the Buddha was a lion, and there's a hare. Maybe I'll just read it. It's not very long. It's a hare who's asleep under a tree. So, it is said... oh no, wait a minute. Where's the start? Oh yeah, here we go. It is that. So the hare's asleep under the tree. It is said that a ripe vilva fruit, having been cut off from its stalk, fell close to the ear of a hare, which was asleep at the foot of the tree. Getting up on hearing that noise, it thought, "The earth is being destroyed," and fled. The other beasts that were in front of him fled too, seeing the hare's flight. At that time, the bodhisattva was a lion and thought, "The earth is destroyed at the end of an eon. In the interval between, there is no destruction of the earth. Now, let me, after going from source to source, so let me look at the causes, find out what's going on." So the lion questioned each animal separately. No conferring, is the earth being destroyed? Beginning with the elephant. When he came to the hare, he said, and listen how he says it. He said, "My dear, did you see the earth being destroyed?" And the hare says, "Yes." Okay. And the lion says, "Come then, my friend, show me." And the hare says, "I'm not able, sir." So he's like, "I can't do it, I can't show you." And so the lion says, "Hey, come, don't fear." So the lion, using gentle speech alternately with firm speech, took the hare along with him. So that displays a little bit the attitude we need to have. We need to be like soft and also quite clear. The hare, standing not far from the vilva tree, said, "May there be blessing to thee." In that place where I stayed, it echoed, but I don't know why it echoed. So he's got to the place and he's like, "Oh, actually, the earth's not destroyed." Wow. And so the bodhisattva told the hare, "Stay here." And he went up to the tree. And he looked at where the hare had lain, and he looked at the ripe fruit on the ground. And he looked up at the tree and saw the stalk that was still on the tree from which the fruit had fallen. And he concluded, "This hare, while lying asleep here, got the idea that the earth was being destroyed when he heard the sound of the fruit that fell near his ear." And he questioned the hare to find out if that was true. And the hare goes, "Yeah, that's what's happened." So then the lion goes around. Oh, he offers this stanza. He declares what's happened. The hare ran off after the echoing sound of the vilva fruit that fell. And having listened to the hare, the army of frightened beasts ran. So then the Buddha tells all the beasts not to fear. And then he goes and looks and he's like, "Well, why did this fruit echo so much?" And he finds a rat hole. So the hare was lying on a rat hole that the fruit fell on the ground, resounded, and he thought the earth was being destroyed, told all the other animals ran, you know. And so that relates a bit to the story I was telling at the beginning about you know, when I came down to the kitchen and it's like that, and it goes so quickly. The mental process and the feeling process underneath it goes so quickly, and we create and we create and we create. And so what this is saying is, when it is, look into the causes of what's going on, look into the actual causes of your thought or feeling processes. And when you can do that, that is the place of release. That's where you can let things be enough that you're no longer identified with them and they can pass, which is really, really helpful. But all of the other ways that I was talking about before you get to this place that are really important as well for being able to approach, because sometimes our thoughts and feelings really are like wild animals. They really are very unapproachable, or they're very pervasive. And so we have to find ways of breaking the process down. So just to repeat, that can be in the ways that we've been teaching about before, where you find some stability within the body. It can be through coming into awareness, through developing the heart qualities we've talked about. And it can be through this process of examining, is this a helpful thought for me? Is it wholesome? Is it leading in the right? Is it leading towards freedom, or is it leading towards more suffering? And you can, if you're able to get somewhat close, you can use some of the tools to balance a bit the mind that we were talking about. So if it's a very angry or upset state of mind, you can bring metta. If it's a very desiring state of mind, you can bring a bit more contemplation on impermanence. So it's like finding enough balance that then you can actually get close enough to explore some of the causes, to explore what's going on. So, I hope there's something in there that's helpful. And I'll end with a poem, I think. And what I really like, this is a poem by Rilke. Do you know the poem Rilke? Yeah? And there's... yeah, I'll just read it. There's a bit that I really like in it, but I'll just read the whole thing. So... I am too alone in the world, yet not alone enough to make each hour a holy. I am too small in the world, yet not small enough to be simply in your presence, like a thing, just as it is. I want to know my own will and to move with it, and I want in the hushed moments when the nameless draws near to be among the wise ones or alone. I want to mirror your immensity. I want never to be too weak or too old to bear the heavy, lurching image of you. And then this bit I find really relevant, this contemplation of all the parts of ourselves. Let no place in me hold itself closed, for where I am closed, I am false. I want to stay clear in your sight. I believe in all that has never yet been spoken. I want to free what waits within me so that what no one has dared wish for may for once spring clear without my contriving. If this is arrogant, God, forgive me, but this is what I need to say. May what I do flow from me like a river, no forcing and no holding back, the way it is with children. Then in these swelling and ebbing currents, these deepening tides, moving out and returning, I will sing you as no one ever has, streaming through widening channels into the opening open sea. So, thank you for your listening.